Hello and welcome to another episode of the Uncommon Energy Podcast. On this week's episode, we'll be talking about plenty of things in the world of the Pokemon TCG. First off, Pokemon evaluating the world's CP bar, potentially thinking about lowering it, making it easier for people to qualify for the World Championships. We'll talk about a few new cards that got revealed a couple weeks ago, mainly Gardevoir EX. Coming out with Scarlet and Violet base set. Seems like it's going to be a pretty good card, if you ask me. We'll also, of course, have Guess That Flavor Text, everyone's favorite segment of the podcast. It's going to be my turn to pick a card for Azul. And then we will wrap up this week's episode with our San Diego meta forecast, because 2023 is here, but we're hopping right in to regional championships. The first regionals of the season being in San Diego, just a few short days away. My name is Chip Ritchie, and I'm joined here, as always, by my friend and co-host, Azul GG. What's up, Azul? How we doing, man? How's your 2023 starting off so far, just a couple days in? Anything to complain about yet?
No, not really. Nothing's really changed too much. Had a good holiday break. We got another regional already coming up. First or second weekend, whatever, into the new year. The first regional championship of the year is coming up, so getting prepared for that. It's going to be the first region. It might be the only regional that I'm actually... No, because there's going to be the regional in... Actually, is the regional in Fresno actually like officially announced? Or is it just the back of the t-shirt?
It's not on the Pokemon website. It's on that organizer's t-shirt, so who knows?
Yeah, so this might be the only regional I actually drive to. It's still a little bit of a drive, like a 7-8 hour drive. But yeah, this might be the only regional I drive to then if the Fresno regional doesn't end up actually... happening, despite it being like semi-announced, I guess. I don't know. So we'll see. But yeah, excited for the regional this weekend. Feels like not too much has changed in the meta, but we'll see. We'll see what happens. Maybe just end up bringing Kyogre again. But how was your holidays, Chip?
It was good. Spent some time with my family over the holiday. You know, we talked a little bit about Christmas on our last week's sort of episode, half episode. We had some technical difficulties last week, so if anyone didn't watch that little short recap last week, I understand. But we got it figured out. We're back home now, so you know, I was traveling. I was at the beach at my parents' beach place, celebrating the new year with my family, watching a lot of football. My family loves college football, so we watched a lot of college football, which was good and fun, and brought in the new year, which was great, and drove back home. So now I'm at my normal setup. We don't have any technical issues anymore. We get a normal episode out this week. And yeah, 2023 off to a great start. 2022 was an awesome year for me, just personally as well. Like, I traveled a ton. Even outside of Pokemon, my wife and I went to London and Paris for vacation, which was a ton of fun before the baby came. And then obviously I became a father in 2022, which is pretty sweet. And yeah, just really looking forward to this year, man. Hopefully that momentum and excitement of where life is at just gets to continue to carry forward into this next year. And I'm looking forward to it. And we're getting right into things with San Diego this coming weekend.
Yeah, that's awesome. Yeah, looking forward to 2023. Hoping to continue to grow. Hopefully the game continues to grow. Looking to keep growing, you know, my content. Hopefully the podcast specifically, you know, keep on with the podcast. Keep everything growing, getting bigger. And yeah, to start off with, we're talking about Worlds qualifications and the fact that Pokemon is actually saying something instead of usually them not saying something. The big thing I think they announced was they put out a tweet. I'll go ahead and read the tweet. Attention trainers, the CP requirements for the Pokemon VG World invites are now live. So that was like the biggest part about this announcement. Mm-hmm. But then there was like a side note. Please note that the qualification threshold for the Pokemon TCG is actively in review as we monitor the numbers of invites as the season continues. And we were going to talk about this last week, because this news was dropped like 2 weeks ago now, but of course we had the technical difficulty, so we're talking about it this week instead. And yeah, so VG got their world's invite announced. For anyone who does play the video game, and if you want to know, you need 300 points for masters in the US and Canada, 130 for juniors and seniors, Europe 250, 100 for juniors, 130 for seniors. That's actually interesting that all the other juniors and seniors for Europe, Latin America, Oceania, and then the Middle East / South Africa are 100 for juniors and then 130 for seniors. Why do you think that's weird? Like that the juniors...
It's just all about number of events. There's just more events in
America. But why is there... But in North America, juniors are 130, seniors are 130. But then everywhere else, juniors are 100 and seniors are 130.
There's just going to be more tournaments, so it'll be easy. Like, it'll be easier in theory for a junior player to get their Worlds invite playing in the U.S. versus someone who's playing in Europe. So
one of the senior, shouldn't the seniors CP be more as well?
Maybe that would be the case. Ideally, I don't know. I guess so. It does feel a little weird.
And then in Europe, like Masters, it goes 100, 130, 250. But then for Latin America, Oceania, and the Middle East and South Africa, Masters is 200.
Yeah.
I don't know. Just, it feel,
that's
it
all
feels
about
a
number of
weird
events, though. I mean, that's similar to TCG.
Is it?
Yeah. TCG for Europe right now, it's 250, 250, 350. Latin America, it's 250, 250, 250.
Oh, yeah.
So
I guess I never really looked at the other regions, to be honest. I'm not going to lie.
Yeah, there's some wonky stuff going on here for sure.
It just looks like it scales weird. But I guess it depends on how many invites they want from each division, from each region. I'm sure they have some kind of formula behind it.
Sure.
But yeah, they did announce that the TCG divisions or the TCG CP requirements might change. I can only imagine it going lower, though. Like, yeah, it said, they said it's subject to change, or depending on the number of invitees, they might adjust it. But I feel like it would only ever go lower, right? I don't think they're going to increase it at all.
Yeah, I don't think that's ever going to happen. If they're changing it, it's getting lowered for sure. And right now, where we're sitting at, we've got six players currently qualified for Worlds at the halfway point of the season, pretty much, right?
Is this the halfway point?
Yeah, right? Because it's August, September. Oh, I guess, no, it'll be more like February sometime. It'll be like halfway point.
Yeah.
But we're getting close.
We're like a couple months away.
I guess after OCIC, that would be the technical halfway point, because that'll be half of the ICs. So,
yeah.
In theory, half of the championship points possibly being earned will have been earned. Now, granted, supposedly, League Cups are coming back in 2023. Haven't had any more information about that just yet. Hopefully we hear something soon. I'm hoping before OCIC we hear something. Definitely the month of January would be awesome, but I'm hoping we don't wait until Scarlet Violet base set comes out. That's my real worry, is that local play doesn't come back until Scarlet Violet base set, which is like the end of March, which is such a long time, but we'll see.
Yeah, my assumption would be that they're going to try and bring it back. It's actually my prediction last year before they even announced anything, is like they're going to probably bring back Cups and Challenges going into quarter three, which would be after OCIC. So we're about a month and a half away, or a little, like almost 2 months, month and 3 weeks away from that. But who knows? Maybe they'll just bring it back for just the fourth quarter. That'd be a little bit weird. And maybe they'll inflate the number of, maybe they won't change the number of CP Cups and Challenges give you. They'll just lower the amount of CP bar it is for the Worlds invite, which I could see.
I will say this is like good to see, though, this just level of communication. And you mentioned that a little bit when you were first reading this, because normally we would just hear nothing and we would be left to wonder what is happening, what's going on behind the scenes at Pokemon. But now we get a little bit of insight. We know that they are aware, okay, the player base is maybe a little concerned about what the CP bar is currently. We'll talk about it, and they're at least talking. That conversation is at least happening at TPCI, and what will come of that, who knows? I do hope if they make a change, that also needs to happen soon, because people are trying to plan accordingly, right? If someone's sitting right now with 150 points or something like that, a Worlds invite still probably seems super far away. I think if you're sitting around that 150 point mark, it's entirely possible, especially if Cups and Challenges come back, and especially if they lower the CP bar. But you want to, like, if you're thinking like, all right, I'm only planning to go to two more regionals, maybe if I think I'm going to be close to my invite, I'll try to swing the third. If you know the CP bar gets lowered, you're like, okay, I'll definitely try to swing the third, right? Because like, I've got a better shot. So the sooner they get that info out, the better it's going to be for the players, and the better it'll be for the tournament organizers, the better it'll be for, like, parents who are trying to plan trips around having, like, I was talking to one of the dads who I coach, his kids, and he was telling me, like, you know, we're feeling like we're probably going to be on track, but it's a little risky for us to plan a trip for four people to Japan in August, which we're going to have to start doing in the next couple of months if there's a chance that one or both of our kids, like, just kind of misses out, right?
Yeah.
So
yeah,
it's a tough spot to be in for so many people, because there's so many moving parts to it as far as travel and you know, having all the information in front of you as far as being able to plan with the championship point requirement is very beneficial and very important for those things.
Yeah, so hopefully they announce it sooner than later. I mean, the fact that they're adjusting it mid season or whatever just feels still weird. I think I mentioned that before.
Yeah, they did this once before.
Yeah, but like this, one of the things that like I had the question. I was like, does this happen in any other game? Are they ever just in the middle of the season like, all right, we're gonna change the invite structure, like for like anything, any other kind of competitive card game or anything like that? Is there ever like any doubt that what they tell you initially is gonna be it, or like that they don't even tell you what you need initially? Because it took us, we're a couple regionals in before they even made an initial announcement of like the championship points, right?
I think they did announce it right before Baltimore. It was like right before the first regionals, but it was like a week before. It was very late for sure. Back in 2017 when they changed the CP bar, right? They changed it. It was like 60% of the way through the season, something like that. I think we were just past the halfway point maybe. And I was someone who did not have my Worlds invite before. But after the change of the CP structure, they like made it so your cup points were increased by like 5 points. So like I gained a bunch of CP and they lowered the bar. It was like both of those things happened. And so all those things made it so that at NAIC, I was able to get my Worlds invite. But if they hadn't changed the Worlds structure, I wouldn't have gotten my Worlds invite. And I remember talking to Sam Chin actually about it at that Worlds, saying like, you know, this is my first Worlds. I'm glad I was here, but I can't help but feel like, you know, it's a little less earned than maybe another invite because I wouldn't have gotten it if they hadn't made all of these changes. And he said, no, Chip, you earned your Worlds invite. They messed up, right? If Pokemon is having to make a change to their structure mid-season, it's because they messed up at the beginning of the season. They didn't do the numbers right. They didn't figure it out as to how many points were going to be available, how many players they want at Worlds, whatever. Something got messed up, they made a mistake, and now they're having to adjust. And that's, you know, I guess why you don't see it happen in other games, because these mistakes happen less often. Or maybe if in other games, if those mistakes happen, they just kind of stick with it. They're like, you know what? Yeah, sure, we'll have a small Worlds this year. Though I guess Pokemon's structure is like different than many other games, I feel like. But
yeah, so for anyone in the comment section who like, or if anyone who's listening on YouTube wants to put in the comment section, you know, what other games have you participated in before? Like Yu-Gi-Oh, I don't know, Dragon Ball, which a new One Piece came out. As far as like invite qualification for tournaments for those kind of games, do they ever adjust it and change it in the middle of a season or leading up to some kind of invite tournament? Magic the Gathering as well. I don't know why I didn't mention Magic. I had like named all the other ones.
One Piece over Magic.
Yeah. And for anyone who plays in any of those games that have like invite for, you know, certain kind of levels of tournaments, do they ever like adjust it just like in the middle of the season? Or do you ever not know going into the initial part of a season what you need to qualify? I'm curious. So yeah, leave that in the comment section down below. It is weird because like we know Pokemon basically, or for the most part, we know that they don't know how much CP and at what rate CP the players are going to gain their CP for sure. Or they don't know roughly how much they just put a number of how many invites it seems like they want per region. And then they adjust this if they're not close enough to it. Or there's like a range of invites they want per region. If they're not close enough to it, they're like, all right, we got to change something. It seems like that's their process, right? They have a rough estimate of what they think will get the regions there, or like how hard they have to make the players work for it. And then be like, okay, we're trying to hit this range of invites from, let's say, North America. Let's give them throw 500 CP at them to start with. And then we'll see by the middle of the season how many people have their invite and how many people we can predict to have their invite. And then we'll adjust it if we want more people to have their invite.
Sure.
It almost
feels like the decision to go with the current structure was based on, I this is the same as the old system, right? 500 points for North America. With the four quarters set up, with the cups, with the regionals, all that stuff, the best finish limits, they're all the same as what they were in 2019 and 2018, stuff like that. Maybe not the same as 2018, but it's the same as it was before the pandemic, right? In the 2019-2022 season, maybe the same as the 2019 season as well. It feels like they were just like, yeah, this system worked good for 2 years, which I think it was fine, right? For 2019 and the 2020 setup. I think that it was fine overall. There were some issues with like how League Cups counted to stipends and stuff like that, right? But as far as just the overall, get 500 points to get to Worlds for North American players felt pretty decent and very achievable, right? So that it feels like it was almost a situation of, yeah, what we've done in the past works. Let's just run it again. But then they forgot that there's no League Cups or challenges for the whole first half of the season.
And also the game grew a ton, right? So you have like 1,000-person regionals. Yeah. So it's harder to get championship points now, I would say, right? Like, or get like more championship points. Like, it's harder to get top 32 and top 16 when there's so many more rounds you have to win to get there, right? So like, even then, like if you have players who go to, maybe not someone like me who goes like every regional, but you know, they try and go to maybe like, you know, there's like 15 in North America. So they try and go to like 7-8 of them. They're going to be, you know, placing, it's going to be harder for them to like, you know, place in like top, you know, 32, 16s, or even push for some top eights or whatever, because of how much bigger the events are. It's that much harder to place that much higher, right?
Yeah.
For North America specifically anyways. And even in Europe, like the European regionals have been getting huge too. So yes, yes. It's harder over there as well. So it's harder for people to just accumulate points in general outside of just cups and challenges.
Yeah, definitely. I mean, it used to be a situation before where usually we would have, you know, 14-round tournaments, right? 9 rounds day one, 5 rounds day two. And then sometimes a couple of regionals a year would hit 6 rounds day two because they'd get over 800 players. Now it's like every tournament is 6 rounds day two, which is, I mean, that's great for the growth. Like, that's great to see from our perspective as people who love the game and people who create content for the game and stuff, and who are one of our biggest desires with the game is just to see it grow and see more people enjoy and play it. That's great just from a number standpoint, because that's like, what, 20% growth overall, which if you're talking about just 2 years' time, 20% growth in a player base is incredible. That's like massive.
It's more than that, too, because all the registrations are filling up. Right. Like, I think this will probably be the first non-1,000-person regional will be San Diego. But they also sold out registration. They didn't have room for 1,000.
There were more people interested. Yes.
Yes. And I know they're trying to keep it filled. They're like canceling, or anyone who's canceled registrations up to this point, they're like reopening those slots, which I've never seen a tournament organizer like that aggressively try and fill up the canceled slots. So that's just good to see. They're trying to keep it, keep the hall packed. But yeah, we won't hit 1,000 players with this one specifically, probably only because there's just not enough. There's not enough room in the venue. If there was, we'd probably have over 1,000 again.
And I'm worried about the future setup as well, because I think in large part this is due to this being the first tournament with VGC. Are we going to have to deal with this issue moving forward for the rest of the regionals where we're not able to hit these big numbers, which we would otherwise, because they're trying to allocate space for VGC? And I don't want to take spots away from VGC. I don't want to take spots away from Pokemon Go. I want them to be able to play their game as well. I just want everyone to be able to go and play their games. I want there to be big enough venues for all of these things to happen, which I understand there's tons of logistical issues. And, you know, these venues were probably booked forever in advance, right? And they didn't quite account for how much of a growth there was. It feels like the game has grown and Pokemon has not been able to quite adjust to that quickly enough.
Yeah, I think, we're already having that problem without VGC existing. So it's going to make it, without VG being at any of the other tournaments so far, we already had the issue of like, the venues were, registration was fully sold out, and there's a bunch more people who are still would have liked to have shown up and play, but there was no.
I mean, the last couple regionals, there was like, you could register pretty late, I think, for like Toronto and like that.
You're right, but they did sell out eventually, didn't they?
I think so, but it was like, it wasn't the situation of if you don't register in the first 15 minutes, hours. You're not going to get a spot, right? Like, it was definitely open for weeks, which I think is much better to see. Also, definitely want to give props as well to Team Northwest, who's running the West Coast regionals, running the San Diego regionals this weekend. The transparency on that front as well of there's this many spots that are going to be available at this time, you know, go for it. I mean, that's been great to see. Yeah. And that's just kind of a theme that I think so much would – there would be so much less – headaches and so much less complaining from the community if there was just more transparency, if people could just maybe understand a little bit. And I get that there's some things behind the scenes that just can't be shared or won't be shared for whatever reason it is, but anytime there's an opportunity to just be upfront, like, people respect whenever someone can come forward and explain why something is happening, just in life in general, right? I think as opposed to trying to like hide reality or sugarcoat reality, people respect you being upfront. And that is true for these situations as well.
Yeah, definitely. I'd like to see more of that. I mean, we've seen a little bit from Pokemon themselves. with talking about the CP bar potentially changing, and then overall, I think we've been seeing that a lot from the TOs as well this year, which is nice to see for sure. Would still like them to would still like Team Northwest to come up with a better reason behind why they're making registration for San Diego, or not registration, making decklist submission for TCG close at 9 p.m. or 8 p.m. on Friday instead of 8 a.m. on Saturday. But I guess we're not going to get that level of transparency. Or maybe they don't have a good reason. That's also
no, wrong. They did give us the transparency, but the reason was just not good.
Well, I'm hoping they have a different reason that they can't tell us. I mean, but then if they're not going to tell us, there's no reason for them to have no reason that they can't tell us. They should just tell us. If they have a better reason, they should tell us, because the current reason is, it's pretty bad. I guess we already went over that. Yeah, it's a pretty bad reason.
Well, we'll talk a little bit more about that later in the cast. When we talk about San Diego, for now, let's move on to some of these new cards that got revealed recently that will be in Scarlet and Violet base sets for us. It'll be the Japanese sets Scarlet EX and Violet EX, our Scarlet Violet base set. So a few cards that officially got revealed, one of them being Magnezone EX. This is one that we already knew about because it was in the Worlds trailer, but this seems like a pretty decent one, obviously. I don't know, we can talk about just kind of our thoughts on the Stage 2 Pokemon in general in the current format. Maybe we should do that before we talk about these cards. Because, the official reveals, we got Magnezone EX, Stage 2 Pokemon. We've got Gardevoir EX, a Stage 2 Pokemon. And then we've got Great Tusk EX and Iron Treads EX, two basic Pokemon. We'll talk about what these Pokemon do in a second. But first, I guess before we get into it, I'd like to hear Azul's kind of thoughts on where he feels like Stage 2 Pokemon kind of fit into the meta right now, right? Because we're going to be getting these Scarlet Violet cards injected into our current format with the rotation, of course, happening. We'll lose a bunch of cards. We'll get these thrown in. It feels like Stage 2 Pokemon might have a hard time competing, though, with the power level of Mew VMAX, the power level of Lugia V-Star, the power level of Arceus V-Star, even something like that. These Pokemon that just need one evolution in order to be swinging for hundreds of damage and can chase down these Pokemon before they have a chance to evolve through things like Boss's Orders.
Yeah, I mean, so right now Stage 2s aren't very good, but that's because when you get to the Stage 2, it's like you first have to deal with being slower, and having your set of Pokemon kind of picked on. And then once you get to the Stage 2, you still can't compete with the Stage 1 or effective Stage 1 Vs and Vmaxes, right? Or yeah. V-Stars and Vmaxes. But I think the new EX Pokemon Stage 2s, there are a couple things. One, they have a lot more HP. They're a lot more durable than the other Stage 2s. Right? Yeah, once you get there, they have a lot of HP. They're basically rivaling Vmax Pokemon for HP. And then their setup Pokemon are not two prize Pokemon that can be easily picked on early and give up a lot of prize cards to kind of accelerate the prize trade, so that when you finally get to your Stage 2, your opponent's already drawn three or four prize cards and they have to get through one of your EXs and then they win the game, right? You know, you're evolving from Ralts, Magnemites for the Magnezone and the Gardevoir. So if your opponent's taking early knockouts before you get your big Stage 2 EX Pokemon setup, they're only drawing one prize card or maybe two prize cards before that, right? They're not knocking out like an Arceus V before you get to your V-Star and getting two prize cards or something like that. So I think it's like the biggest thing is like they're just not drawing as many prize cards before you get your big Pokemon set up. And once your big Pokemon is set up, it's gonna be a lot harder for your opponent to actually deal with that big Pokemon.
And we did see this in the past, right? I mean, the most recent example that I can think of was during the GX era, and it was with Gardevoir GX, which was one of the most powerful GX cards. It did a ton of damage for low energy, and it had a really strong ability. And then against Zoroark GX, which was a Stage 1 evolution, where it felt like Zoroark GX was very favored in the early game because you could just chase down Ralts and really pressure them and make it difficult for them to get more than one Gardevoir in play. But as the Gardevoir player, if you ever got two Gardevoir in play, you just felt like you were never going to lose the game.
Yeah. Yeah. And like Decidueye was kind of the same way. Once you got your Decidueye's GX online, you felt a little bit more comfortable. That was before Zoroark's time, I guess, but
like Decidueye versus Volcanion would maybe be a better example, because that's like two different, well, maybe not Volcanion, because
I don't know if I do
Decidueye probably wasn't ever beaten Volcanion, but I don't know,
like, Decidueye versus like other stuff back in the day,
other EX Pokemon from the XY era.
yeah I was gonna say, yeah, so it'll be like, again, it'll be a little bit more similar to that, where like once you set up, once you establish your two prizers, then you should be, or your stage two Pokemon, they are still two prize Pokemon as well, your stage two EXs, the power of having that stage two in play, there just needs to be some power to having a stage two in play. Just getting to a stage two should provide some level of like power on the field itself, just getting to the stage two. Hopefully none of these are quite as, or none single one is quite as good as Gardevoir GX was, because I think Gardevoir GX was really too good, and I think it like kind of ruined the format when it got released. Like, that's why everyone plays 2017 Nationals or 2017 NAIC, and no one plays the 2017 Worlds format, because it is just so much worse, because Gardevoir was a terrible card to have imprinted. It was just too strong. It basically did to the format what Lugia is doing right now, where it's just like number one deck. I think if we had like gone back in time and like put that format in the current day and age of information share and all that stuff, like Gardevoir would be like a 30% deck for sure. So yeah, I mean, it even was like, there was only two, after Worlds there was like two decks. It was Espeon Garb and Gardevoir. There was no other decks playing. It was just two. It was a two deck format. It was even worse than it currently is. So, but I don't think it seems to be getting a good mix so far. Like the Magnezone or the Gardevoir don't seem too ridiculously broken. And hopefully, yeah, you just like, once you get to that stage two, once you put it in play, it needs to command like a certain amount of respect from your opponent and give you a certain amount of options to make it have been worth to play a stage two in your deck. And so far, it looks like they're giving us that with these two. These two seem solid, and then we'll, and hopefully like the future, that's going to be the biggest thing. It's like they have to keep giving us ones that, you know, command that kind of respect when you put them in play. And I think it is possible that they might, stage two still might just be a little bit too slow out the gate, right? We might need a couple sets of EXs, or we might even need a rotation to hit to kind of slow all the other effective stage one VMAXs and V-Stars down before we actually get to the point where stage two EXs can be consistently viable in the meta.
So let's talk about these stage twos. We won't really worry about the basics and stage ones for these, but for now, let's just look at the Magnezone EX. This is one that, like I mentioned, got revealed at Worlds back in London in August, but this is the official, you know, full reveal, not the shadowed out where you can't quite see everything on the card, right? It's got 330 hit points. It's a lightning type Pokemon, and it has Energy Crush for one lightning energy, dealing 50 damage for each energy attached to all of your opponent's Pokemon, and it has Pulse Launcher for two lightning, 220 damage, then this Pokemon does 30 damage to itself. This card, I don't know, this feels very okay to me. Energy Crush is obviously something your opponent can play around to an extent. Certain decks have a harder time than others, like Lugia, you need four energies, right? And it does say energy, not energy card. So like double turbo, like it's not like Lugia can throw a double turbo down instead of two powerful energy or two capture energy, right? To make it do less damage. So I don't know. Magnezone feels very okay to me. Not something that seems too powerful that I would expect to see play right away.
Yeah, it doesn't seem too, it seems okay. Being able to do 220 for two lightning is like, all right.
Yeah.
32 itself, though, bringing its HP from that 330 down to 300 does not seem great.
Its best attribute is probably its HP number, and your main, I mean, probably, I don't know, mixing in Energy Crush and Pulse Launcher, you'll probably use both of these attacks a decent amount. So the fact that Pulse Launcher brings down your own hit points is definitely something that retracts from this.
Yeah, I mean, being able to attack for one energy, though, even if you're 2-hit KO in your opponent's Pokemon, when you have 330 HP, you're probably getting 2-hit KO'd back. I don't really hate that.
Yeah.
Hate that trade-off, especially if you have some kind of healing involved in the deck. I don't even know what we keep. I don't know if we keep Cheryl to Cheryl survive
stays.
Rotation.
Cheryl stays, yes. Yeah, I need to be careful because I said something wrong the other week and someone like called me out. I think we were talking about Hisuian Arcanine and Stone Energy. Stone Energy does not stay, by the way.
So unlucky.
That out. Yeah.
Yeah, but the Magnezone, I mean, with Cheryl, if Cheryl stays, then yeah, I could see you could just do an Energy Crush deck. I mean, your opponent has to have some count of energy in play to attack, right? So if it's just consistently enough to get 2-hit KOs or 1-hit KOs on some smaller stuff, then that's kind of all you need.
And this one, I think, is definitely, I mean, if you want these to have an immediate competitive impact, they need to be to this power level, most likely. And that is going to be Gardevoir EX. It's a 310 HP Psychic-type Pokemon EX. It's a Stage 2, of course. It has the ability Psychic Embrace. As often as you like during your turn, you may attach a basic Psychic Energy card from your discard pile to one of your Psychic Pokemon. If you do, put two damage counters on that Pokemon. So a little bit of a drawback, but for the power level. That is a very worthy trade. And then it has an okay attack here for two psychic and a colorless, 190 damage. Heal any special conditions on this Pokemon. So when I read this card the first time, I was like, yeah, this seems pretty decent. And then I read it again and saw it said, as often as you like. And I was like, this card's pretty dang good. Someone at Creatures loves Gardevoir because Gardevoir consistently, I mean, we were just talking about Gardevoir GX, right? Like Gardevoir consistently gets incredibly strong cards.
Yeah, always gets a decent card, which I think is fine. It's like kind of go back to some cards over and over again and keep bringing them back. Gardevoir EX. We had Gardevoir GX. We had Gardevoir, Gardigale GG back in the day. And now we got Gardevoir EX.
Mega Gardevoir.
Which seems pretty good.
Both the Mega Gardevoirs were pretty good in their time, right? Like,
Yeah. Mega Gardevoirs had their time as well. So yeah, all the Gardevoirs have their time. And it seems like Gardevoir EX will probably also be pretty decent. I just have the Dark Weakness, which I feel like is usually not a great weakness to have. But I don't think that's been true in the most recent
it depends on the meta pretty much, right?
Like, we've had Darkrai and Yveltal for so long that it was always pretty bad to have Dark Weakness for a very long time.
Yeah,
and then even we had Zoroark as well at some point, so being weak to Dark was not very good, but currently it hasn't been like a terrible
Mew, right? To have is like weak to Dark, and
yeah,
I mean, I guess the main problem would be stuff like Drapion being splashed into like a Lost Box deck where you can Mirage Gate to it, or even Lugia's playing Drapion now, right? Like they have ways to one-hit KO a Gardevoir. But Gardevoir, is it going to be the thing you're attacking with, or is this going to be the type of thing that you're setting up other things, right? Is this a stage 2 support Pokemon? Probably what makes it good is the fact that it can be both, right? It can be your attacker and it can be a support Pokemon, just depending on what you need at the time, right?
Yeah, I mean, the fact that you put two damage counters on your Pokemon, the thing is, yeah, like you could splash in so many like basic V Pokemon or just basic Psychic Pokemon and attack with them, because it can, because Psychic Embrace, you can use it as often as you like, and I did the double take too when I first read it. I read it a first time, and I was like, oh, okay, that's kind of cool, and then I read it another time later on, I was like, oh, wait, I completely misread this ability. This is way better than I thought it was. You are doing two damage to your Pokemon, so even playing like some basic psychic Pokemon, if there's enough decent ones that, you know, maybe need quite a few psychic energy to set up, then the psychic embrace, you don't need the big thing I guess with this Gardevoir and what we have access to for the Gardevoir line currently is you only need to really set up one Gardevoir EX and then maybe be able to potentially set up another one if your opponent KOs your Gardevoir EX, right? But then we have a bunch of different Gallades and Gardevoirs and Kirlias. I don't know which ones are going to be legal come rotation. I'm pretty sure we'll have both Kirlias, the Water Duplicates Kirlia and the Trade Kirlia, because we just got the Trade Kirlia. So that'll definitely be...
Yeah, neither of those are the right ability, but I get what you're saying.
Yeah. I don't know what the attack name is for the Kirlia.
Mirage Step.
Mirage Step.
Yeah, put
for anyone who doesn't know what it does, one Psychic Energy, and then search your deck for three Kirlias and put them onto your bench.
And I don't know if you want to go that route or like has refinement from the newest set from Silver Tempest.
Discard a card from your hand, draw two cards. And then we have a bunch of different cards. We have like a Gallade that searches your deck for a supporter card.
Yeah.
We have, I don't know if either of the other Gardevoirs survive rotation.
They do.
One of them, they do? Both of them?
Yes.
Okay. So one of them just draws two cards. And if you have any psychic energy, you can attach them. And the other one is refinement again on the Gardevoir. So there's like a lot of cool pieces you can put in the Gardevoir deck for sure. As far as the Gardevoir lines go, a lot of utility you can get out of all the stages, the Kirlias, the Gardies, I guess not the Ralts, and then you have the option of putting some Gallades in there as well to do some different stuff. And then the question would just be like, what are you attacking with? 190 for three is really not that good, so I'm sure you're gonna have to find some other psychic attackers to probably work with the Gardevoir EX.
Yeah, people will be digging with the basic psychic filter on TCGO or PKM in cards or whatever. Try to find what those best psychic Pokemon are. It is definitely a little limiting in the fact that it can only accelerate two psychic Pokemon, which is kind of a bummer. But I saw plenty of tweets where people had tons of ideas. Like, I saw a picture of like... what's the guy with the Burning Road ability? Weirdeer V, right? You can throw a bunch of energy onto that thing. I spelled it wrong.
Oh, yeah, because, you could always just recover all of it. Yeah. I mean, if you really wanted to get really creative, you could get Thorn involved, I guess. But that would allow you to get attack with stuff outside of just psychic Pokemon, but that's probably too much work. But there's a galley that's searching for a supporter, so you just need to get the you just need to get the attacker into the discard pile, so it's possible.
Yeah. So lots of options and lots of things I'm sure to come for Gardevoir. Definitely going to be a solid card. And like I said, if they want these Pokemon EX evolutions to compete in the current meta right off the bat, they need to be probably to this power level. And I think Gardevoir definitely has that potential, and we will probably see it do decently whenever it first comes out, and probably even better once rotations and stuff happen in the future. And who knows what other basic psychic Pokemon that are strong attackers get revealed in the future. And then we got two more Pokemon to talk about. Great Tusk EX and Iron Treads EX. Treads. neither of these seem the best. They have like some utility, I guess. And it's cards like this are like always things to keep in mind, right? For a format like a basic fighting Pokemon that can do 250 damage, throw a choice button on it. That's 280. Decent numbers. So if there's something that comes out in the future that can get your fighting energies in play a little easier, you think about the Great Tusk EX, right? But for now, Bedrock Breaker doing 40 damage and discard a stadium in play for one fighting, and Giganto Tusk for three fighting, 250 and 50 to itself, probably not the best.
Yeah, it doesn't seem... I wasn't blown away by either. Actually, I want to go back and read this card, though.
Iron Treads.
Okay, I went away the Rock Chestplate. Card. Fighting Pokemon, this card attached to you takes 30 less damage from attacks from your opponent's Pokemon, unfortunately. So you can't protect your Great Tusk from itself. You're always going to be hitting yourself for 50. And it is weak to Psychic. So if Gardevoir is just good, then I'm pretty sure Great Tusk is just bad. So that does not seem good.
And then Iron Treads EX, Metal type, 220 HP, a basic Pokemon. It has the attack Triple Laser for three colorless. This attack does 30 damage to three of your opponent's Pokemon. And then for three metal and a colorless, Cybernetic Wheel, 160 damage. Switch this Pokemon with one of your benched Pokemon. I think there's a chance that Triple Laser could have some utility as like a spread option, but three energy is probably just too much. Another one that it's like, you keep this in mind, it exists in the format, but it's probably just going to stay in the back of your mind for most of its existence.
Yeah, and it's actually funny because there used to be a Registeel EX that had the exact same attack for the exact same cost. It did 30 damage to three of your opponent's Pokemon for three colorless energy, and it was not good back then. And everything had less HP and did less damage. So, yeah, I don't think the Great Tusk or the Iron Treads are going to be very good. Maybe the Great Tusk. If we have a way to accelerate three fighting energy out pretty consistently at a moment where you need to do 250 to 280 damage, get a choice belt on there, then I could see... Oh, wait, but Choice Ball doesn't even work for EX Pokemon, right? We don't even have...
No, but, I mean, V's and V-Stars are going to stay, right?
Yeah, yeah, of course, yeah. So I didn't even think about that. But, yeah, so if that ever comes up, then sure. But, yeah, neither of the... I thought they would be pretty good, too. I thought they would try and do something with the Dawn fans, like make them decent, but they both seem pretty mid.
Yeah, it was honestly kind of funny. I saw some Pokemon players' reactions to these card reveals. Let me pull this one up. It was pretty funny, where someone was like... haven't played Scarlet and Violet and just found out this Giza's name is literally Great Tusk. Cool Pokemon, but disappointing name. Something like Primordial Dawn Fan would have been cooler. And I was kind of bummed too that these were in our first Scarlet and Violet set, because what I was expecting, similar to what we saw in Sun and Moon whenever those cards came out, is... we get, you know, the new Pokemon, we get the GXs, and we have that for about a year. And then at the first World Championships, they announce Pokemon GXs, but the Ultra Beasts, right? And then they bring out all these cards that interact with the Ultra Beasts, right? Like Beast Ring and, you know, Beast Energy Prism Star, and the fact that all their GX attacks have to do with your prize cards. Like, it just added something new and unique to the game. And so that's kind of what I was expecting them to do when it came to the Primordial Pokemon, the Pokemon who, spoiler alert for anyone who hasn't played Scarlet and Violet, probably a small percentage of people would care about that at this point. It's a spoiler alert, but like different forms, the past or future forms of some of these Pokemon, like Salamence or Amoongus. or
there's definitely some imposter like, Pokemon for sure,
like Miss Drevis. Like, there's a lot of really cool Pokemon, and I think that it's a little disappointing that they're just releasing these Pokemon with like the regular set. They're just regular EXs, and that's not to say they won't do something with it in the future, but it feels kind of like if they were going to, we wouldn't have gotten it quite like this. I was hoping Primordial would just be a mechanic, and it's not.
Yeah, I guess that probably hints at it not being a thing, because these are two of the main ones. I don't even know. Are these two of the main ones in the game?
Yeah,
the Primordial Pokemon?
Yeah, depending on which version you play. Great Tusk is in Scarlet, Iron Threads is in Violet, and they're like part of the main story, both of them.
I mean, they're going to be giving us something. So, I mean, they didn't give us that. They're probably not doing something with Primordial Pokemon. I guess they could still. Seems like they won't. Or is there like a... No, no, there's not like a, these are the Primordial versions, right? There's not an Iron Treads Primordial. There's not like a...
No.
Yeah, okay. Yeah, so it seems like they're probably not going to do something with that, but they always do something, so they're going to give us something. They can't do everything, right? So, I don't play the video game, so I can't be as disappointed as you, Chip. I'm sorry.
Well, I just want them... I mean, you can be disappointed because you just like it when they do unique things that are cool, right?
You can still do that. I just don't care that it's not with Primordial Pokemon. They can still do it. They just have to actually do it. They can do it with anything.
I also did think that, I mean, it is a good point. Whenever I first played the games and I was like, dang, this guy's name literally is just Great Tusk. It's not, it's just like plain and not a poke, like it doesn't sound like a Pokemon. It just is what it is. But I guess that's what they're going for, right? Because it's like prehistoric, you know, caveman be like, ooh, Great Tusk Pokemon, right?
Yeah.
but then it doesn't make sense for the future because it's like, surely they would have a better name than Iron Treads.
That's true. Yeah, just a descriptive describing what they are.
Yeah. And that's how just all of them are.
Magnemite, Magnet, Ball.
There's actually have you even seen all of the Primordial Pokemon?
No. On stream a little while ago, I looked at all the Pokemon in Scarlet and Violet, and I think I did end up seeing most of them, yeah. Yeah. Well, maybe they will still do something with it then.
That. What are they called? I've been calling them the wrong thing.
They're like boss Pokemon, aren't they, or something?
Yeah.
Maybe they will do something with that then. They just like maybe release these like this, and then maybe in the future they will release something to do with the rest of them. It's possible. Maybe these are just kind of the ones that
it's
are...
It's a Paradox Pokemon, I'm sorry. A Paradox Pokemon, yes.
Yeah, so we'll see. Maybe they will do something with the rest of them, because there's quite a few of them, right?
Yeah, there's a bunch. I think there's like six in each version. And we'll get, you know, probably DLC for Scarlet and Violet in the future, which will most likely...
Have some more.
But yeah, I mean, all of their names are like... it's like Roaring Moon and Sandy Shocks, Slither Wing, Flutter Mane.
Yeah.
You know, it's just very plain to what it is. But, you know, I guess like more than likely there'll be some new mechanic in the DLC that will likely come out sometime this year. And then whatever cards we get revealed at Worlds will be tied to whatever the new game mechanic is that comes out. You know, similar to like for Sword and Shield, they had the game and then the DLC came out. And then with the DLC came Urshifu. And you could have it as a single strike style or a rapid strike style. And then when it came to the TCG, that's when we got rapid strike, single strike. And that's how they mixed it up, right?
Yeah.
So we'll see. All right. And I think from there we can move to everyone's favorite segment of the podcast. Guess that flavor text. Where each week, Azul or I, sorry, I like... zoned out there for a second. Where each week either Azul or I will pick a card and read off its flavor text to the other host. That person gets a chance to guess what that Pokemon is. We do keep score, we do keep track, and you get 4 points if you get it right without any lifelines, but there are 3 lifelines you can use. Those lifelines being what set the card is from, what stage the card is, and read an attack name. This week it is my turn to pick for Azul. I do believe I am leading Azul. I do need to go and update the scoreboard sometime soon. I think I said that a couple weeks ago too. I have not done that
You've
yet.
You've been saying that, yeah.
I've been saying that. I'll get to it. And but yeah, Azul, are you ready?
I'm ready, Chip. Hit me with it.
All right. Its newly grown legs prevent it from running. It appears to prefer swimming over trying to stand.
Oh, man. It's going to be a tough one. All right, go ahead one more time.
Its newly grown legs prevent it from running. It appears to prefer swimming over trying to stand.
Man, I got no clue what this could be at all. I'm trying to like, think about like Pokemon, water Pokemon that have like a bunch of like extra limbs. I can't quite come up with anything off the top of my head. I guess like Nihilago comes to mind for a bit, but that is like a squid. That's like a jellyfish Pokemon. So it's not really something that could like it can probably be able to choose between being in water or out of water.
I will go ahead and tell you as well that Nihilego is not a water type.
Well, no, but it's
but
like
this Pokemon is also not necessarily a water type. So
yeah. It looks like it belongs in the water. It looks like a jellyfish. All right, let's go. We got to do some
lifelines.
Let's start with the set. What set the card is from?
Interesting that you go with the set because you say that is the one that is least helpful to you. This card is from base set.
Oh my! Oh wait, that makes it. There's not that many Pokemon. There's not that many Pokemon.
151. All right, yeah. Less than that in base set actually, but.
So now the one that's coming to mind is the. Tentacruel, and there's another one. Tentacruel. I don't remember which one is which.
There's only two.
Is it Tentacruel and Tentacruel? Oh no, is there actually a stage two for that card? Right?
No.
When was the last time they printed a Tentacruel or a Tentacruel?
It's been a minute. But in the new games they have new variants for Paldea.
Okay.
It's Totuscool and Totuscruel, I think. It might be a little different than that.
All right, so let's go with what stage the card is.
It is a basic.
Okay. Basic Pokemon from base set. Read the what's it called one more time? The text, the flavor text?
Its newly grown legs prevent it from running. It appears to prefer swimming over trying to stand.
Its newly grown legs prevent it from running? Tentacool only has like... It's not Tentacool or Tentacruel then, I don't think. What is a base set Pokemon that is growing legs? What is this? All right, I'm going to need a little bit more help, so let's just read the attack name as well then.
It is Water Gun.
Maybe it is Tentacool. What other Pokemon could it be? All right, I'm locking in Tentacool. Let's go with it.
It is not Tentacool. There is no Tentacool in base set, actually. Fossil.
Unlucky.
But the Pokemon that makes sense. Is Poliwag. Poliwag from base set. You know, he's a little tadpole guy, yeah. So he just grew his legs, right?
He doesn't want to run. He can't run. It's too much work to try and stand. So he just goes for a swim until he evolves to... The next one.
I gave you one I thought you might have a good shot to get, man. I was like, base set, you know, like he should be able to narrow this down.
Yeah, I was not on track for that at all. It does make sense, though, now that we've talked through it. Yeah, that makes sense. Yeah, I could see the Poliwag for sure.
Well, maybe you'll get a chance to catch up in 2 weeks and I'll get to increase my lead next week. We'll see what happens, though. Well, let us know down in the comments if you are playing along with Guess That Flavor Text. Did you... get it right this week? How many points are you at? There's someone who always updates every single week with how many points they have, and I love to see that. So keep it coming. And from there, we can move on to San Diego Regionals, which is this weekend, the first regionals of 2023. But we're really churning through this season and churning through this format as well. This will be the fourth major tournament. Or I guess it's actually the seventh major tournament in this format because of that weekend where there was a regionals in like every part of the world, it feels like. But this will be your fourth tournament played in this format, Azul. And I guess before we get too much into it, what are your kind of, I guess, just general thoughts on the health of the meta right now? Does it feel a little stale to you? Is there no room to innovate, no room to find something to counter the meta anymore? Or is there still a chance? Is there something out there?
There definitely might still be something out there. I haven't come up with anything too great yet. Just kind of a bunch of things that are like, okay. Nothing really can dominate Lugia. And a lot of the times, like any of like the little cute niche things are a little bit dependent on what Lugia lists look like and, you know, sense the weekend of Counter Lugia, where Lugia got pretty hard countered. We saw a bunch of cool things kind of pop up. Lugia lists have been like, okay, I can beat all these things by learning the matchup and just by like adding a Bird Keeper. So
like, yeah,
and all the cool stuff has basically been found out, and now it kind of doesn't really beat any Lugia deck consistently. And then usually a decent amount of the cool stuff struggles against Lost Box as well, especially depending on what the list for Lost Box looks like. So, yeah, it's just, I mean, it feels pretty tapped. The format feels pretty tapped. It's what I kind of expected to happen too. It's like, okay, I didn't really expect Lugia to be that hard countered going into the Toronto, Brisbane, Stuttgart, I think it was, weekend, where it was like, it was a bunch of different stuff that people came with a bunch of cool, unique ways to kind of tackle Lugia with the way it was currently being played. I didn't expect it to do all that kind of stuff to do that well. I expected some level of pushback. But then Lugia obviously went right back to its winning ways, which is like, okay, here's what they can do to kind of beat me. I'm just going to beat them now, right? Because it feels like, because Lugia is that good and flexible of a deck where it can just be like, once it knows what it has to go up against, it just, it can beat whatever it wants to beat. So it's a pretty, I think it's just a bad meta overall. It's a bad format. I think Lugia is way too good, way too flexible. Sure, we had that one weekend where all the, I don't know, believers in the meta where everyone was like, see, Lugia's not broken, but all you have to do is wait another weekend and then Lugia was back to dominating again, or wait for the next weekend of major tournaments and Lugia was just back to dominating, because all it has to do is figure out what it needs to go against. Going up against the unknown, you can even prepare for most of the unknown as well, right? Like most of the unknown was pretty much known. Like people knew about the paralysis stuff to an extent with like the Zekroms. Articuno was a little bit known from Palkia lists from LAIC, and then also people knew about Mewtwo V, and like none of this stuff was super unknown. It's like, are people really going to bring these things? And it turned out they did. And then Lugia was like, okay, I have to tech for these down. Then it did. And now it's just back to Lugia dominating once again.
Yeah. So we'll see kind of how the trend continues into San Diego. And I guess kind of the question I had about it was, you know, we saw from LAIC to Toronto, right? Lugia does insanely well at LAIC and then gets hard countered in Toronto. Will we see a similar transition into San Diego? Because if we look at the last major tournament, regionals in Arlington, Lugia definitely dominated the event. It won the tournament as well, of course. Are we going to see in San Diego a lot of those counter decks come up? Because there were still some counter decks, you know, doing decently. I don't know if you call Regigigas a counter deck. It kind of just is a deck on its own, right? But Alex Kreckler's second place list, the Vikavolt thing with the Aerodactyl, is definitely, you know, that is a counter deck, right? That is a deck that is aiming to have answers to what the specific meta is.
I mean, I don't think we'll see more than what we've been seeing. And like I said, like it's not even so much more that there's people playing less of the counter decks. It's just they're not as good when the Lugia players are more equipped with the knowledge of how to play the matchups and tech cards to tackle the matchups, right?
Yeah.
So I just don't think there's like, and people have to come up with some new kind of tech. Like I don't think the paralysis stuff works consistently, and I don't think that the major problem with the paralysis stuff is that your lost box matchup generally with any of the paralysis stuff is just like terrible, right? So I don't think the paralysis stuff really works. And then for like Mewtwo V Union, there was so much Drapion. there was so much Drapion at the tournament. Like I don't think you have to come up with some new counter stuff. I think for sure, because I don't think any of the counter stuff that was working at like the Toronto, Stuttgart, Brisbane, I don't think any of that stuff works anymore to beat Lugia.
Yeah.
So you have to come something new. And I don't think we'll see the kind of same dominant weekend into getting hard countered weekend like we saw from LAIC, like after LAIC. I don't think that's really gonna be a thing. Because there isn't that much out there to actually counter Lugia.
So you said you're not a fan of the current format. You don't think this current meta is good. Do you think that this meta feels better if Dunsparce doesn't exist? Is that the card?
Yes. I think it is Dunsparce. I've been saying this for a while. I think Dunsparce is a terrible card to exist. It's so silly. It's so silly how hard it... Because usually like Pokemon formats and metas shift around, you know, a deck's really good, it gets countered, and one of the main ways that decks are countered in Pokemon is through weakness, right? Yeah. Sometimes it's strategic, like spreading or hitting hard. Like sometimes there's like a really good deck, but it can't get handle getting one hit KO. So it establishes itself as the best deck or the most popular deck currently. And then decks that can one hit KO it become the better decks because that deck can't stand up to getting one hit KO'd or something like that. Right. But usually weakness is the main driving force for meta shifts and meta changes. It's like this deck's really good. This deck is weak to this. This deck is now better because it's a good deck and it beats and it's got the weakness advantage against the most popular deck, right? So when you have Dunsparce, or not even Dunsparce, because we see a lot of Lugia players choose not to play Dunsparce, but with how flexible and how many different options and attackers you can run in Lugia to cover for its weakness, it just becomes like it's just too good. It's just too good of a card. It's too broken. And we're just kind of getting the same thing we kind of got with Palkia. Palkia was weak to Lightning and didn't even have Dunsparce. And it was like, well, it's still going to be like 40% of the meta because it's just that good.
There's
right?
only one. Like, well, there was also only one good Lightning option in the format, in the Flying Pikachu, right?
And that's there was like, still Reggie's, but
yeah,
it didn't have Gift Energy back then, which was a pretty big deal.
Yeah, Reggie's was not recover. As good before Gift Energy came out.
Yeah, so I don't know. I think this meta is terrible. And I think a good telling of when a meta or a format is just a bad meta or format is when the meta does not shift. It doesn't change, right? We had like the counter decks pop up for a week, but that was it. They were good for a weekend. They were good they were good until they were known and everyone was scared of them, and then they're just not good anymore, right? And then it's just bad. And it's like, okay, can Lugia overcome those you know bad. Quote unquote bad matchups or tech cards, and the answer is yes. And now Lugia's just back to dominating again. And there's no flow of the meta. We don't see Lugia ever dropping below that 30% meta share, right? Like if Lugia came in and out of the meta, like it was like, okay, Lugia was really good this weekend, but obviously everyone's gonna counter it next weekend, and the counters are good and they work. So Lugia dips down to like 10% of the meta because everyone's gonna counter it the next weekend. Basically no one plays Lugia. And then it was like, okay, well, maybe now that Lugia hasn't done well for a couple weekends of major events in a row, maybe people are going to stop checking for it, stop trying to beat it so hard, and now I can play Lugia again, right? But we don't see that shift in flow. It's just like Lugia 30%, Lugia 30%, Lugia 30%, Lugia 30%. And it's even higher in day two. It's like 40% and stuff like that. I expect it to just kind of stay that way until we get the new set, Crown Zenith. It doesn't seem like it'll change much, though, and like Lugia will still be... it feels like a... Darkness Ablaze into Vivid Voltage. It's so funny that that's like a meme in the in the game now, because that was such a bad major set release of what it of it having like zero impact on the format, because ADP was so broken it didn't matter what got released in the next major set, that we just go back to calling everything the Darkness Ablaze, Vivid Voltage, the dark time. So one of the darkest times. And Crushing Hammer wasn't everything as well. There's four Crushing Hammer on every
yeah,
deck
that format,
and it was the
man.
Same format Ugh. For like 7 months or like 9 months or whatever. It was
honestly
ridiculous.
Maybe it's kind of a blessing we didn't have a Worlds in that format, because that would have been the Worlds format. it would have been right around dark, or it would have been like around Darkness Ablaze release, so it would have been that.
Oh, okay, it wouldn't have been too bad. It would have just been ADP dominating everything.
And Dragapult and Eternatus and Pikarom. Yeah. That was like the format. And then I guess before we get too much into like, so I want to talk about Lugia and like what techs and what cards people should play, because there's the lists, like you mentioned, look super, super different. But before we do that, I think we should definitely mention about the deck lists, right? Because deck lists are due 8 p.m. Friday. They are not due 8 a.m. Saturday. They are due 8 p.m. Friday. So if you're traveling to San Diego, you need to make sure that you submit your list Friday as you're traveling down. Otherwise, you're going to get a round one loss, which that has happened before. People have gotten round one losses for, you know, not failing to submit a deck list and then done decently in the tournament still, made day two. Like, it happens. But you're putting yourself at a big disadvantage. You don't want to do that, right?
Yeah.
you want to... get your list submitted and have your deck ready to play. So we talked about this a couple weeks ago, how like those last few hours, the night of testing or the day of testing, is usually really beneficial. People iron it out usually before midnight, and then they have their list ready to submit in the morning when they wake up and get ready to go to the tournament. That's not really an option. So people are probably going to be doing a lot of testing this week with their groups, where they normally try to get those last few cards ironed out when they get to the tournament. Do you think that this early submission is going to have any sort of impact on the uniqueness we would see from the top level players, right? Like do the ideas like, I don't know, you know, Espeon VMAX or whatever, you know, just these things that maybe came to players in the hours before the tournament, or the final counts of like, you know, if you're playing weird cards like Canceling Cologne in your deck, or, you know, how many bosses orders do we play? Like, are we going to see less unique things from players because of the early decklist submission time?
Yeah, I think so for sure. I think that will definitely have an impact on them for sure. Because like you only have so many hours where you get together with your testing group and can kind of like really like there's so, it's like it increases the process of like testing and theory crafting like tenfold being in person with everyone talking and discussing stuff within your group. So I think it will definitely impact the potential on what could have been, you know, because like everyone gets in sometime Friday, right? So like if it's getting shut off at Friday at 8 p.m. Instead of Saturday at 8 a.m. That's like, I mean, no one's trying to stay up all night. I've done it before, but that's like 12 hours you theoretically could lose, right? Like sometimes you stay up till like 3-4 a.m. getting those last couple cards ironed out or fixed or whatever, but usually probably around more like midnight is when people are like locking in at 60, but that's still theoretically like 4 hours less, right? Especially if people are getting in at like 5 p.m., 6 p.m., whatever, or getting there after work. Like people are submitting the deck list, you know, Friday morning or Thursday night, right? So,
and also sometimes
I think it definitely has
like,
a big impact.
Sometimes you get down to like 59 cards and then you sleep on it and then you decide that 60th
yeah,
card
yeah.
in the morning, where it's like an easier choice, right? Like an energy versus an extra support or something like that, right?
Yeah. So yeah, I think it sucks. I don't think they've given us a good reason as to why they're changing it. And I think just like the way every other regional has been run so far with it starting or with decklist submission closing at Saturday at 8 a.m., there makes no sense for it to not be due or to have it be due Friday at 8 p.m. It kind of sucks. I don't know. It definitely will impact. Yeah, it definitely will impact that kind of scenario. It won't like overtly all impact. It won't make it like a, there's no asterisks next to the tournament or anything. Unless I don't win, of course. But yeah, it'll be
unless you don't get top 16 again.
Yeah, if I don't get top 16 again, it's because I didn't get those, you know, extra 4 hours to discuss the broken lightning Pokemon change in the Kyogre deck. We're going with Emolga or something.
Emolga. Is there even an Emolga in the format?
There's like, yeah, it does 30 damage and then it knocks us out.
It's like free retreat, right? Yeah. That's what makes it.
Yeah, definitely. Well, a little bit. Yeah. And I don't know. If they give us a good reason behind why they're changing the time, I think I'd be like, all right, that's fine. But they haven't given us a good reason yet. It's just kind of like the only reason they've given us is they didn't want to by accidentally mistype one of the times for one of the games. So they made them all at 8 p.m. Pacific, which is just silly.
Yeah. I mean, I can understand wanting to keep things uniform across all three games, but at the same time, whenever it's worked out fine for all the other tournaments, what I'm really worried about is like anyone who's not super involved on Twitter, not super involved into like watching podcasts. They just show up and compete for these tournaments, whatever, that they will have played in a tournament a few weeks ago and decklist submission was at 8 and then they roll up to this tournament. And they realize I'm getting a round one loss because I didn't see this. I guess it is on the tournament page at least. So like hopefully people realize that. But the more normalized things get across other games, across other tournaments, I should say, the less time people spend like looking into those things. Also, like we should remember as well, this is the organizer that for Salt Lake City chose for top 8 and top 4 to be 60 minutes,
yeah,
best of 3 instead of 75. Yeah, which is, you know, they're able to do, but it's just different than what every other organizer does and what every other every internationals does, right?
And theoretically, that only adds 45 minutes to the tournament. I mean, maybe they really need to get out of there at a certain time. So I guess that is like reasonable, right? Like they really had to get out of there by a certain time. But yeah, that was also a little bit bizarre for sure. Yeah, I don't know. Hopefully maybe they'll keep throwing wacky stuff at us each tournament. Like we'll go, yeah, we'll have 60 minutes. You know, it'll this turn. So top cut for this tournament will be 60 minutes plus you have to submit your deck list by 8 p.m. Friday, and then those two will carry over to their next tournament, and then it'll also be like instead of 50 minutes in the Swiss rounds, you get 45 minutes, and they'll slowly start making it weirder and weirder and weirder.
Just make it different for no reason.
Yeah, and then eventually, everyone, if you the side of the table you sit out at the first round, you have to sit on that side of the table for your next round, and they'll just keep going. And I don't know, they'll just keep adding some new thing that none of the organizers do or that they did at their last tournament, and then just keeps piling them on top of each other.
Well, back to the Pokemon decks, let's go back to Lugia and the many different avenues you can go with the deck, right? It feels like, you know, the things that are kind of set in stone, right? You're going to play Lugia, V-Star, and Archeops. You're going to play 4 Powerful Energy in Stoutland. That seems like pretty much every list is going to be on that at this point. That wasn't necessarily the case going into LAIC, but I think from here on out, that's going to be in there, right? Pretty much everyone's on Evil Tall and the Aurora Energies. Some lists will deviate and try to do wacky stuff, but that's a pretty powerful route to go. Most lists are going to have Radiant Charizard, but moving on from those kind of more shoe-in pieces, there's a ton of question marks, right? And let's just kind of run down the list and say yay or nay to these cards for San Diego this weekend. Not necessarily just in Lugia in general, but when you're thinking about the tournament this weekend. So let's start with Manaphy. Bench Barrier, Bench Protection. What's it called? Water Veil. Yeah, is the ability. Yay or nay in Lugia for San Diego? Yep.
Yay.
Yay. even though Connor Fenton did not play Manaphy or Dunsparce, which is the next card, is Dunsparce.
I would go yay on Dunsparce as well. Because I think if you're playing one, you want to play the other. I just play both.
Yeah.
Have the tech cards.
Yeah.
Reggies and the Kyogres.
Yeah. Yeah. Having the answers to the lightning attackers that could pop up. Really the main thing is Reggies, right?
Yeah.
And then I guess like Raikou in things, right? Like Connor Fenton won with a Raikou in his deck. And that would be the next one on my list as well, is Raikou in the Lugia, right? Do you play the Raikou in the Lugia for the mirror, or is it even good in the mirror?
Okay. I think Raikou still sucks. I've thought Raikou has sucked for a while. I think Raikou still sucks. I don't think it does anything.
Yeah.
I don't think it does really anything in the mirror. It's like, okay, against Lost Box if they don't put their Manaphy in play, but the chance that you, if they know you have Raikou, or just put their Manaphy in play because they're like, well, I have one other Pokemon to grab here, I'm just gonna go and put Manaphy in play in case you have Raikou, like the chance that it does anything in that game is like super low to like none. So
yeah,
I still think Raikou just basically does nothing.
That's really the spot where it's the best, right? Because you can't use Raikou, Yveltal, and Charizard, right? It's not possible unless you're adding more energy.
Yeah, you gotta add the energy.
You gotta add energy, so you gotta add, like, Roseanne's and an energy, right? Like, you gotta change some stuff, for sure. And
even then, if you play six, if you play, like, five or six non-colorless energy, you still have to hit them in a sequence that lets you use all three of those Pokemon, so.
Exactly. So, it's not something you can use all three of them, but it's like you don't want to use Yveltal against Lost Box, right? So that's where Raikou, I think, is best in Lugia, is in the Lost Box matchup. And it's probably where, like you mentioned, right? Like if you catch people off guard, if they're not expecting you to have it or they don't know that you have it, boom, you slam it down. Boom, you throw three energies on it. You take two prizes. That gets you ahead and maybe wins you that game.
But now things will be a little bit more on people's radar. So, like, the Lost Box will be going out of their way to make sure they get the Manaphy into play. So, it'll be a little bit less powerful for sure.
So, let's look at some of the techs that people played in their top eight lists. So, we saw John Ng get top four with the Regigigas and the Path to the Peaks. Really wanting to have an answer for the Arceus Duraludons. Didn't want to take that L. Path to the Peak can still be a decent card in the mirror match, right? If you get it down at the right time and then Pumpkaboo or vacuum it away on your turn, right? It can help you get ahead if you go second in the mirror, right? I don't know. Do you think Path or Gigas is worth it? Yay or nay?
I think it's like probably a better way to beat Arceus Duraludon. If you really want to beat Arceus Duraludon, I kind of favor it to like the vacuum route. I would favor it to the vacuum route if you really want to beat it. Vacuum is just such a bad card in Lugia. It's so bad. It does absolutely nothing in like all of your matchups besides giving you a chance against Arceus Duraludon. But I feel like the paths are just more consistent because you don't have to just have Gigas. You could do the quad powerful plus choice belt Lugia, and that also won a KO's Duraludon. So I think if you really want to beat Duraludon, I would go the Gigas route. And then it also kind of doubles as your Drapion against the Mew matchup as well. Like it's really good against Mew, so you get that as well. Not that Lugia really needs a tech for Mew. I was actually surprised how many Drapions there were, which is the next card you have on there, and I am also not a big fan of Drapion as well.
Yeah, I mean, I think Drapion, the reason it's in Lugia is because it solves several of your potential issues, right? It lets you one-hit KO Mewtwo V-Union, it lets you one-hit KO Espeon V-Max in the mirror, and it lets you one-hit KO. I mean, it's obviously like going to be something you can use in the Mew matchup always. So that, I think, is, you know, the fact that it's a one-card inclusion that can do three really good things for you is why people chose to play it. Going into San Diego, though, I mean, I kind of feel like there's a chance control is on the rise a little bit. And if that's the case, maybe you do want the Drapion in your Lugia deck.
Yeah, I do feel like Control will be a little bit more popular, or Control type things will be Mewtwo V Union, I guess, will be a question, because Drapion's not good. It's only good against that kind of build. Whereas something like the next card we have on the list here is Eldegoss Birdkeeper, I think is a little bit more universally good against every kind of Control. It's good against Yveltal. It's good against Paralysis stuff. Whereas Drapion's like, I'm good against Mewtwo V Union. That's it. And then it is good against Mew, but it's one of those things where it's like, you don't really need it for the Mew matchup. It's just kind of, it's not bad to have an extra out to the Mew matchup, of course, because it's probably still going to be a pretty popular deck, but I would probably lean, if I'm trying to tech for Control, I would probably lean a little bit more on something like the Eldegoss or something like that.
So let's go Drapion, yay or nay?
Nay.
I'm going to say yay. I actually do think the Drapion is still good. But
I don't think it was. I don't think it was ever good. Okay. I don't think the Drapion was ever good.
I do think the Drapion is probably decent this weekend. It's just,
I think it was. It was probably good to play at Toronto, but if you didn't play it at Toronto, you kind of missed. It's like
Arlington.
That kind of at Toronto. I think, okay, if you played at Arlington, like, you missed the opportunity to play the card. So it's like people are trying to make up for their missed opportunity, and now they're running it at Arlington. But it's like, what are you hitting at Arlington? Like, no one was playing Control at Arlington. It helped in the Mew matchup, sure, but so many decks had Drapion, and everyone beats Mew. Like, Mew is getting just like kind of steamrolled right now in the results. So it's like, I don't know what anyone was trying to beat. Like, yeah, it's like, it's kind of like, I don't know. It's almost like FOMO. Like, it's like, okay, Drapion would have been a really good play in my Lugia deck at Toronto or that weekend, right? Then it's like, moving forward, well, what if it's a really good play again? Now I have to play the Drapion, right? But it's like, I think it was, you missed your opportunity to be a little bit ahead, and now you're just putting yourself behind by playing it the majors afterwards, and just let everyone else kind of, you know, be the sheep of the meta shift, and be, let all of them add their Drapion and let them take care of the Mews and Mewtwo Unions for you, and then, you know, get plus one spot on your list.
I mean, like, Control decks did exist in Arlington, right? Like, people played it.
I mean,
sure. Did you play? What did you play round one?
Mewtwo V Union.
Okay. So it existed. People played it. So, I mean, it's not like, and I would argue that there was a probably a higher percentage of the field playing Mewtwo V Union in Arlington than they did in Toronto. But Toronto, the results were higher because it was better for the meta, right?
Yeah.
So,
yeah.
But once it did, it won Toronto, obviously. Piper won with it. And then now it's on people's radar. There's a good list to go off of. People play that list. So there's more people playing it, but the meta is worse for it because people are prepared. And I think Drapion is one way people prepared for it.
Yeah, that is fair. But I'm saying, like, you got to get out of the, this is like, this is what I like to do, is like, I like to put myself a step ahead. I like to be the person
who knows of course.
Everyone's going to play Drapion, and I'm going to choose not to play the Drapion, and I get plus one card in the mirror match now.
And then everyone else is going to play the Drapion. Dice that you're not going to hit the Control in the early rounds.
I can hit two of them. I can go 6-2-1 today too, and then beat all the mirror matches because I got plus one card. And I think even like on top of that, moving forward, I mean, Sablezard, like the two most popular builds of Lost Box, probably. I think Ray is like another reason that it's going to be harder for Control, because I think Lost Ray is going to be more popular now. And then that's going to be like the main way to play Lost Box, I think, is Lost Ray. And that just, you just need the Ray and you just one hit KO. And then Sablezard will probably be the second most popular build of Lost Box still, because people still don't like to pick up the Kyogres. And that deck just plays Drapion. So I think, I think it's going to still not be good for Control, which means unless you really want the Drapion for the Mew matchup, if you really are that unconfident in that matchup, if you haven't had enough time to test it or something, and you really want to have that get out of, I don't even know if it's that good in the matchup, to be honest. It's not really that good against the Meloetta build, that's for sure, because it's just a two prize you're sending at them that's easy to KO, right?
Yeah.
So it's really only potentially good against the Mew build. But Mew can do some sneaky stuff, like the DT Mew build, where it's like, okay, if you attack with Drapion, they're going to go like double cross switcher up an Archeops, you know, Roxanne plus Path, and then your Drapion's kind of stuck there potentially. So I don't even know how good it is up against the DT Mew build either. I don't even know how good the Drapion is, to be honest, against Mew specifically. Definitely good against Mewtwo V Union, but I think everything else is kind of taking care of that. So, you know, get your plus one spot.
And then the last card on the list would be Espeon VMAX. This was mostly popular in Toronto, but people did still play it in Arlington. Jordan Gobert got top four with it in the deck. Did Liam? Liam did not play it, yeah.
And see, this is, I think, a perfect example of playing the tech card at the right time when Bradner and crew played Espeon VMAX at Toronto. It was like, they predicted people coming up with counters for Lugia, and they're like, we don't know for sure what they are probably, but they're like, Espeon VMAX covers most of it, it seems like. Let's just play Espeon VMAX, right? So that's a perfect, like, a perfect example of playing a tech card at the right time And then after that, I think SBN VMAX stocks fell pretty drastically because everyone came up with different ways to counter the paralysis and the Yivitols and how to beat control and all that stuff. So the value of SBN VMAX went way down. And then we even saw John Ang, who's part of that crew, you know, they didn't play the SBN, they didn't run it back with the SBN VMAX, right? They moved on to some other tech cards. Was Giga's Path really worth playing? It did help John on the winning in before the winning in, I think. But you know, they cut the SBN VMAX. They're like, okay, we got it for the one event where it was most impactful. And that was like, that's a great example of like playing the tech card at the right time and not having that kind of FOMO and being like, well, it was really good this time. There's a lot of those control decks. Maybe I should play the SBN VMAX now at Arlington. You know, you want to, you know, be a little bit further ahead to get that extra advantage whenever you can.
So next up, I wanted to talk about Mew VMAX, which has been the second most popular deck this entire format. Is it still, for San Diego, going to be the second most popular deck? Because if we look at the Arlington results, I mean, Mew is nowhere to be seen. We see it at 24th,
38th. It was so 38th. Much straight beyond.
Like, Arlington was not Mew's tournament at all. No. But it was still the second most played deck. So are we going to see a similar trend? Like, will Mew still be the second most, third most played deck, something like that, a top three deck? And if so, like, should it be, right? Like, are Drapion stocks maybe coming down a little bit? So maybe Mew feels a little better. I don't know. What are your thoughts?
I definitely think Drapion stocks are going to come down a little bit. Like I said, I'm not a huge fan of it right now. So I think their stocks are going to come down a little bit. But I don't think... I think it'll maybe fall to third. Well, it's kind of weird because like the graphic, I like to think of Lost Box as one deck, like all the Lost Box together. But like the way they break it down the meta into the regionals, Lost Box is split up into two or maybe even three categories, right? Okay, so it's like Sablezard.
It's basically Sable. It's basically Charizard versus Greninja.
Okay, Charizard versus Greninja. So it's split into two categories. I think those two combined will be the second most popular decks in the so Mew will probably be the second most popular deck, but not by as much. It was like 12%. Actually, I think my predictions were like spot on going into Arlington. I was like 30% Lugia, Mew will be 12%, Lost Boxes will be 5 or 6, and then Reggie Arctur will be 4 to 6 each. Yeah, I think it was pretty much spot on with all. There's another deck. I'm missing another popular deck in that somewhere, isn't there? Or is that it? That's it? It's like a three deck. It's like two
those
deck.
The three, yeah. Meta? And then Reggie's was fourth most popular, I think.
Yeah. So Mew will probably be the second most popular deck again, but it won't be 12%. It'll probably be around like 8 or 9%. Because like at the end of the day, Mew is still Mew. Still a very powerful deck. But there's really no reason to play it in the current meta over other top decks, unless it's your only deck, which I think a lot of players kind of have that one Pokemon deck that they play. It's your favorite deck, and a lot of people just go back to their favorite deck over and over. And the third reason, which is the worst reason to play Mew, is comfortability. And I think a lot of people are just going to go back to playing Mew because they go, I've been playing Lugia for the last couple of weeks. I like Lugia. I think it's better than Mew, but I'm more comfortable with... I'm more comfortable with Mew, so I'm just going to play Mew at the end of the day. And that's where a lot of the Mew percentage is going to come from. It's just players... I just tricking themselves into thinking Mew's a better play for them than picking up the Lugia or picking up the Lost Box because they maybe are a little bit more comfortable with Mew. But I mean, I guess if you're comfortable with just getting 256 over and over and over again and not giving you a chance to kind of give yourself a chance to kind of break through, push for, you know, day twos or even pass that to top eights, yeah, top 16s, whatever, you know, picking up Mew again is not going to be how you're breaking into the higher placement. So it's a lot of people are going to kind of, it just happens a lot where people just pick up the deck they're most comfortable with. And, you know, it kind of hurts. And that's just kind of where a lot of Mew's percentage will come from for sure.
Yeah, it'll still be like the second. I think that comfortability with the deck, like picking a deck based off that, totally depends on where you're at as a player, right? If you're someone who goes to most of the regionals and you're choosing to pick a deck based off comfortability, yeah, I agree with you. You need to try to get out of that comfort zone.
You got
to try to break out. And someone like you, right? Like you've probably played several different tournaments where you just get the list and then you look at the cards and then it's like you play no games before the tournament, right? Right. You just go into the tournament because you have played so many games of Pokemon over your life. You're just a good Pokemon player. So it's like, okay, I know what the cards do. I know what my game plans are. I don't need games with a deck. So comfortability doesn't matter for someone in your position. But then if you're someone who it's like, you know, you went to a regionals last year. This is your first regionals or last season. This is your first regionals this season. This is everyone's first regionals this year, but first regionals this season. Or like if you're a local to San Diego and you're just showing up to play in your first Pokemon regionals or whatever it might be, then maybe comfortability is a better choice for you, because if you're trying to roll up with a Lugia deck because you know Lugia is the best deck in the format and you've played it far less than something like Mew, which you've played hundreds of games with online or, you know, at your local shop, whatever it may be, you're probably someone who should stick to comfortability because it's your first, you know, one of your first couple tournaments potentially, or you only go to a couple tournaments a year. You want to minimize the opportunity for mistakes, and mistakes happen when you're not comfortable, right?
Yeah, yeah. There's definitely like a little bit of a balance to it. Like, and especially one of the main things that I'll mention that as well, if you are trying to grow and get better as a player, you have to give yourself that opportunity by picking up and playing a new and different deck. Or, you know, especially when you've actually put in, because actually I hear this come from a lot of players a lot. Like they actually put in the time with the new deck. Like, you know, maybe Mew is their go-to deck. And they're like, you know what? For San Diego, I want to, you know, work on Lugia, try and play Lugia. And then they play for the 2 weeks leading up to the tournament. And then they get to the tournament. They're like, you know what? I don't feel like I'm going to do as well with Lugia. I'm more comfortable with Mew. And then they end up defaulting to Mew anyways. You got to not do that. You got to take that extra, take the next step and actually commit to what you put your time into to try and get better at and learn more with. Because if you just repeat, you know, pick up Mew over and over again, but your goal is to place better and do better, you're still just going to end up, you know, in that 256 range where you want to try and break into the day twos, the top eights, and so on and so forth. So you got to like take that extra step. Even Mahone dropped Mew. Right. So
yeah.
You can do it too. You can do it too. Riley and Mahone dropped Mew.
Yeah, and JW. They all went
as well.
They all went to the Lugia with the Drapion, and it went well for them. JW didn't do the best, but Riley made top eight and Mahone lost to Riley on the winning end, right? Like so
if Mahone can put the Mew down, you can put the Mew down. You don't have to pick up Lugia, but pick up something better than Mew. You can do it. I believe in you. And we'll all be a little bit more happier with less Mews in the tournament, I think, overall. So you got this.
So will Mew be a top three deck still? Yes.
Second. I think it will be the second. Yeah. It'll still be number
should
two.
Should it be?
No, 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 okay. No. It should probably be like a 5% deck, but it is like so easy to get. People have been playing it for so long. It's a lot of people's maybe only real competitive deck. Not everyone's trying to buy Lugia. So it's reasonable. Like if all those kind of things qualify, then like it's fine to go ahead and pick up your Mew deck. Right. But if you're someone who has the cards to play something better and wants to get better and improve with your results, pick up the better deck, the deck that you think is better for the tournament. Don't just default to your comfortability, because it's just going to hold you back as a player for sure.
And then let's go to the lost box. There's really kind of just the three main variants right now. It feels like the Sablezard, the Rayquaza, and the Kyogre builds. If we're looking at results from Arlington, we would rank them as Rayquaza did the best, Kyogre did the second best, Sablezard didn't really do that good at the tournament. Sablezard has remained the most popular way to play the deck. Do you think we're going to see a mix-up in that? I think based on results overall, Rayquaza did better, even though, you know, like you and Isaiah were in the top 32. You were in top 16, obviously, with the Kyogre build. There was multiple people from different groups with Rayquaza, which usually lends to the fact of, like, you know, this deck was pretty powerful and pretty solid for the weekend. Going into San Diego, do you think we'll see kind of that same ranking of as far as how well it does being Rayquaza, Kyogre, Sablezard among these three? And will the level of how many are played be similar, right? Will it be Rayquaza is the most popular way to play it, followed by Kyogre, followed by Sablezard?
I still think probably Sablezard will be number two. I think Rayquaza does seem like a lot of people are liking the Rayquaza Lost Box. I think that will be the most popular way to play Lost Box for sure, which means it'll probably be the most successful, right? Just based on popularity. But I think even though Sablezard will probably be the second most popular, I think it'll be that or Kyogre as the most successful build, because I don't think Sablezard's very good right now. It's just like you don't have bad matchups into everything, but you're just like, it just feels like you're a worse, you have less options, you're less consistent without the Greninja. It feels like you're a worse deck overall when compared to the Mirage Gate builds of the Kyogre and the Rayquaza. But yeah, it definitely seems like Rayquaza will probably be the most popular build over. And the Rayquaza is nice because Rayquaza does kind of answer all of the weird things you can run into, you know, like one of KOs literally anything. Yeah, Duraludon, Mewtwo V Union, like it literally just one of KOs everything, which is like nice, right? So yeah, Rayquaza I think will be most popular. A lot of people seem to be liking it, which I think is good. Like the it's definitely a good build. I still would prefer to, like, if I'm gonna play one out of those three, I'd probably still play the Kyogre. I think I still prefer playing the Kyogre build. Less good answers to everything, but it is very good against the, you know, the top decks, which is like the most relevant thing. So I would say if you're picking between them, just don't play Sable Sard. Sable Sard just feels like it's just weak. I don't know. It just feels weaker than the other two.
And let's look at now Regis will probably be the fourth most popular. It might even break into the third, maybe, depending on how the Lost Box variants break down. But Regis did just make top eight in Arlington by Christian Fortnot. And Fortnite. and it was very popular as well in Arlington, much more popular than it had been in the previous tournaments. And I think that's probably in large part due to the inconsistency in Lugia decks. Like if you're playing against Lugia decks who don't have Dunsparce and Manaphy, you're probably going to be just fine against that matchup. Yep. Right. But if they have both of them, that's where things get questionable. And obviously the first place list that won the tournament with Lugia did not play either of the two cards. So I don't know if that how indicative that is of the overall field, what people were playing necessarily. But Gigas, where do you think it's at? You know, you think we'll probably see another one in top eight sneak in there? Is it positioned decently, or what are its other kind of questionable matchups, I guess?
I think everything's okay for Regis. There's nothing like too questionable as far as the top matchups go. Like, you know, some of the more fringe stuff like the Arctura and stuff like that is like a good matchup. Your Lugia matchup is fine. It does depend a little bit on what they're playing. Yeah, the Dunsparce, the Manaphy, and so on. If they got both, it feels unfavorable. And if they have neither, it feels pretty good. Feels favorable, but
it's pretty good against definitely control less, as well, right?
Yeah. You're good against like the control stuff. You're definitely less consistent than Lugia though overall. So you're sacrificing consistency, and you got pretty good matchup against most of the Lost Box decks. The Kyogre matchup is close. I'd say that one's about a 50-50. But you're like favorite against Sable Sard and Rayquaza, I think, pretty handedly. So like you have those under lock. The Kyogre, I think, is close. I think it's solid still. Yeah, your Mew matchup is good too. I think you definitely want to be rocking. I don't even know. I mean, yeah, you probably want to rock triple Gigas. If Mew's going to be the second most popular deck in the tournament, you probably want to be still rocking the triple Gigas. I was like off it for a little while, but I've kind of come back around on. I think probably triple Gigas is the way to go. Also, I saw so many people when I VOD reviewed Arlington Regionals. First off, play Bad Lecky, but then bench Bad Lecky. Don't just play the card. The amount of people who like didn't understand, I felt like, when to put it in play in situations was pretty high. So, yeah. Don't just play the Bad Lecky. Also bench the Bad Lecky. It's pretty good. 10 more HP goes a long way sometimes. So yeah, it's pretty cool. It's pretty cool.
Not giving Lost Box a free prize with the Sableye at times can be pretty good, right?
Like, yeah, it's not bad. You want that, but you have to bench HP. It. So.
Yeah. And that was actually one of the questions I had with Gigas. Like, is it worth playing those two techs being the quote bad Regis Lecky, right? You know, people call it the bad Lecky, but it's just, it's got a different use. Like all Leckies, they have their use.
All Leckies are good Leckies.
Definitely to let you get a trainer card back from your discard pile. And obviously I think most of the time, if you're playing this card, it's going to be in combination with the team Yellhorn to give yourself an answer to Ice Q. I don't know. I mean, is the Lecky like really worth playing if you don't have this combo alongside it?
Yeah, I think it is actually good enough. Okay. And also like the potential to be able to snipe something is pretty cool, especially against Lugia. Like Lugia, it can be hard for them to get the Manaphy and the Dunsparce at the same time. So you could like snipe the Dunsparce before they get the Manaphy or something. So I think I would always play Bad Lecky. It's also really good against Lost Box. I think its most powerful matchup is the Lost Box matchup. I definitely would not have played the Yellhorn at Arlington. But I maybe would play it going into San Diego. Like you said, I think control stocks are going up a little bit. You know, Drapion will be coming down out of some decks. So like Mewtwo V-Union has a chance, or like other kinds of control decks. You know, if the paralysis stuff makes a showing again, you have to be able to deal with those SQs somehow as well. Right. So I think, control stocks are going up. I don't know if I would play the Yellhorn though. That would be a last minute late night tech decision. Like I'm unsure about the Yellhorn. I wouldn't have played it at Arlington for sure. Going into San Diego, I'm not too sure though. That is one of those 11 p.m. Night before the tournament decisions.
All right, and then we'll just close it out. We got four other decks to just kind of mention. I think those four that we mentioned are kind of the, you know, the four most popular things we expect to see the most of, and probably the four that will be the most successful. Let's look at Palkia Inteleon. Got a top 32 finish at Arlington. It, you know, got top eight, obviously, in Toronto with Jake Gearhart. The way to play it obviously seems to be With the Articuno, how does Articuno feel going into this weekend? Like, can Palkia stand up to Lugia is really the big question. And it feels to me like people have the answers. It feels like most people will have Eldegoss Birdkeeper. I feel like that's the route most people are going to go when it comes to Lugia. Just getting out of the paralysis two times is usually going to be enough for you to win the game.
Yeah, I mean, not that many people actually had Eldegoss. Almost everyone had a Birdkeeper, though.
Okay, sure.
And I feel like the Birdkeeper itself is enough to just win the matchup most of the time, because Stoutland is still a card you have, right? Like, you get paralyzed, you Birdkeeper, you Stoutland, you draw two prize cards, right?
Yeah.
So if you like got a little bit ahead before that, that usually just like seals up the game. And there's like other cheesy things you can do to kind of get around the paralysis. You know, you attack with a Lugia V or you Luminion, and then you send up like a Pumpkaboo or something. And then if they can't attack with Articuno into a Pumpkaboo, right? Because then they don't paralyze. There's nothing to paralyze. You knock it out, right? So,
yeah.
I think just like the one up Birdkeeper makes the at least Palkia Articuno deck not quite as good. Whereas like the more dedicated like Articuno Inteleon deck, I think has a little bit more viability currently. Like Espeon, like I even just looked at in the day two of Arlington Regionals, like 10% of Lugia's had Eldegoss, and then 30% did have Espeon VMAX. Actually, that's higher than I thought it was going to be. That's a lot of Espeon VMAX, actually. But actually,
it's probably going down, though, right?
My prediction was 30% of Lugia decks to have Espeon. So once again, I'm on point with it. But yeah, the Espeon overall did not do super well. We had to do it Jordan in top eight with it, but I don't even know where the next highest placing Espeon was after that. I still think Espeon's pretty good. It's like it answers all of your weird situations that you don't want to run into, the Yveltals, the paralysis stuff. So I think it'll still probably be close to that number. I think still quite a few people like it. But I don't know. We've been seeing a lot more like aggressive Lugia builds coming out recently with like the Aurora, or not the Aurora, the Aroma, Capturing Aroma, right? So who knows the way the Lugia players are going to go come San Diego. Probably less, though. I think you're right.
Moving down the list, we got Arceus Duraludon got a 17th place finish from Grant Shin after a second place finish in Toronto. Arceus Duraludon, I think with the popularity expected increase of the Rayquaza deck, I would be pretty scared to play Arceus Duraludon for this tournament, honestly. Maybe more scared than even normal. I know I already know what your answer is, so we don't even have to talk about it if you don't want to. But yeah,
and Reggie's too. Like Reggie did super well at Arlington. I think Reggie's will probably keep up with its current, probably with how well it's going for it. So Reggie's will probably continue its going well. But yeah, Arceus Duraludon definitely still sucks, and there's like no reason to play the deck, I don't think.
Eternatus. This was one that got definitely a bit of attention on it in Arlington. Frank Perisic got 33rd with it, unfortunately, bubbling the top 32. Playing it alongside, he was playing the Judge, right? In this, yeah.
Yeah.
Four Marnie, three Judge. So it's just like hyper disruption, slam wheezing, and then Eternatus kind of just exists in the deck as well. What are your thoughts on this deck? It'll probably be a bit more popular at San Diego, I would guess. I mean, I will probably see a decent amount of it. Not a decent amount, but it will like 100%. more so than in Arlington for sure.
Yeah. I think quad wheezing is just better than wheezing Eternatus, because I think quad wheezing auto wins Lugia. I think wheezing Eternatus is slightly unfavored against Lugia. So I don't know why you bring a deck that is unfavored to Lugia. As long as the Lugia player knows what they're doing, I think the matchup is unfavorable. So because they have too many gust effects. And like you to set up and be able to use your wheezings and get it set up and get going, you have to bench a Crobat or an Eternatus, and they have Serena or Boss. Like they have so many gust effects to get to the Lugia Summoning Star and then kind of start to take over from there. So I actually think your Lugia matchup is like unfavorable. But I do think Quad Weezing is like it auto wins the Lugia matchup. That matchup is so free for Quad Weezing. So if you really want to play a Weezing deck, just play the better Weezing deck and then you're good to go.
And the last deck I wrote down to specifically talk about is Control. It feels like Control always needs a little bit of a cooldown period, right? Where it's like it does really well, and then, okay, it gets, you know, people respect it a lot for the next tournament. And then all of a sudden, you know, as people respect it, Control answers kind of get dropped from lists. It's like, ooh, now we can play Control again. Has there been enough of a cooldown period, I guess, would be the main question.
I don't think so. I don't think it's a good time for control. Like I said, Espeons will still be there. Bird Keepers will be there. Eldegard. And it's really just like the only real matchup you need to worry about initially is your control or your Lugia matchup. And then even from there, though, if we expect the raid build of the Lost Zone deck to be the most popular build of Lost Zone, that's already going to be a struggle as well, right? So, yeah, I don't think it's a great time for control right now. At least with the Mewtwo V Union build, I don't think you can play the Mew. You have to do something like Sanders LAIC deck, or something else creative. But yeah, I don't think the Mewtwo V Union builds are very good right now.
Yeah, I mean, I guess if Espeon VMAX is not in list, like Quad Yveltal is pretty solid against Lugia still, yeah. Right? Like there's some merit to Sanders style of that deck, or maybe even Sanders deck from Stuttgart with the Curlia Mewtwo deck, right? Like, I mean, that's not really as heavy into like a control strategy. It's really kind of just aggro Mewtwo V Union. Do you think there's any merit to that?
Yeah, you're still getting punched, really. Like your Mewtwo V Union is still gonna get 1 KO'd. Like, I don't think it like changes too much for you, unfortunately.
Sure.
And also the Reggie matchup, I imagine, is still probably unfavorable if the Reggie player plays it well and holds their path, and then it's just like path Reg Ice, right? And then your Mewtwo can't attack, and then you just kind of lose from there. So. I feel like that matchup would probably still be better. Yeah, so I just think Mewtwo V Union is not the move. But if you can come with something else that's kind of like a control deck, then I think it's probably pretty decent. I guess one more deck that we could talk about would be Krekledge deck.
Yeah, that's where I was gonna. Yeah, those were like the specific decks to talk about.
Yeah,
for Krekler, I was just gonna say like counter decks, right? And or maybe is his specifically the best way to think about it? Or do you think about maybe, you know, because his deck. Is a different engine, but it's a similar strategy to what Michael Catron was trying to do in
Arceus deck.
In his Arceus deck in Toronto, right? Where you're trying to lean into the Aerodactyl as an option. I don't know. I would consider like a hard anti-meta deck.
I think this is better than what Catron had going on. The same idea. I think it's a little bit better. I think it's still a pretty good play. I was thinking this is still probably just a good play. The Vikavolt Aerodactyl deck. Like, your Lost Box matchup can't really change. Like, there's nothing Lost Box can really run to deal with Vikavolt efficiently. Not that I can think of, anyways. And then your Reggie matchup. That one, after like watching it and thinking about it, I think that's probably an unfavorable matchup against Reggie's, but it's not impossible.
Yeah. He did beat it in like top 50, 8. 50. It was streamed, yeah. So.
And then, your Lugia matchup, it will be harder if they know what you're doing. That's for sure. Like, now that the deck is known, the deck won't have quite as good of a win rate as Krekler did at that tournament, for sure. But I think your Lugia matchup still has to be favored overall. So I think the deck is probably still just good. And, like, I think Krekler kind of gave everyone, like, close to a perfect 60 for the deck. So you don't have to change much, if anything. Just got to learn the deck, learn the matchups, and you're probably good to go, to be honest.
Yeah, I mean, Krekler was definitely just running through the Lugias in Arlington. Mahone came up and told me this funny bit from... He played against Andrew in the... Andrew played against Alex in the second to last round, right? So the second of two win and ends, right? But yep. Alex offered the ID because the ID got him to enough match points to... make top 8, but it was like a weird down pair where Andrew needed to get a win and a tie pretty much to get to 35. Yeah. And so Andrew was like thinking about it, but the round previous Alex had beaten Tord playing Lugia, and Andrew said that Tord came up, put his hand on his shoulder and said, "Take the ID." Because it's like, if you don't know exactly what's happening in the deck, you don't know the counts and stuff, like it's going to be it's going to run through the Lugia.
Yeah. Yeah, it definitely seems like a pretty good matchup overall. Yeah, even though, Krekler did end up going down to Connor in the finals, but Krekler drew super poorly in those games overall, which is only going to happen so often, right? And you just hope it doesn't happen. That always feels the worst when you, like, draw poorly twice in a best 2 out of 3. You're hoping that the best 2 out of 3 will even it out for a little bit for you. Like, maybe you dead draw once, but you can get 2 solid games out of your deck from there, but did not happen for Krekler in the finals of that one. But yeah, I think the deck is still solid. Like I said, I don't know if there's much to change about it. I don't think there's much to change about it at all. It's just a solid deck. It still kind of does the exact same thing. And I don't know if there's too much Lugia decks. Like, they can play better. They can play out their turn one more efficiently, more aggressively, knowing what the deck is now. But I don't know if that changes too much of the outcome of the matchup overly, to be honest. So I still think it's like There's nothing that you could really tech in there as Lugia. Oh, the canceling colognes. I guess it's one card we didn't even talk about in Lugia.
Yeah.
So I'll ask you, Chip, yay or nay on canceling cologne?
I mean, I'm going to probably just say nay. You got to play two so you can find it. And then it's just like two cards that are just meh. And some of the decks that you want to use it against, being like the Duraludons and stuff, are probably going to see a decrease in play. So
I don't know. Duraludon stocks are up in online tournaments recently. I don't know. I think it could be a little bit more popular.
I'm starting to believe that it just doesn't mean as much anymore. I don't think
online tournaments are fake.
I mean, they're obviously relevant and like, especially I think that they lose their importance the longer the format goes on. I think early on in the format, it has a huge driving factor into what people play for those first couple tournaments because there's no other results to go off of. There's nothing to base it on. But once we have some IRL tournament results, which, I mean, if we're being honest, like these tournaments matter way more than the online events. People are playing for thousands of dollars. They're playing for the CP. They're paying to be there. So that's where people are pulling out all the stops, right? People are playing everything that they're thinking about. Like, all the cute techs and stuff like that are coming out in these regional championships. I think that not only are less people play as the format goes on, less people play in online events and less good players play in online events and less innovation happens in these online events as well. It feels like it just feels like they have less of an impact on the overall meta when it comes back to the regional championships.
Yeah, definitely. I could see that for sure. No, I think Arcus Toronto will probably be around the same percentage though. There's just like, got like a
too
weird
many believers
cult following. Yeah, it's got like a weird cult following of Arctura believers.
A cult classic deck.
The Arctura. 10 years from now, people will be playing Arctura mirrors. It'll be like
you're definitely gonna at a regionals in 10 years walk by a table and see people playing Lugia versus Duraludon in their old format gauntlet or something like that.
Do not recreate this format at all. never recreate this format. Not worth it. Well, thankfully, this isn't going to be like a world format, so no one's going to remember.
I guess that's true.
Days of Lugia domination.
Yeah, you don't see anyone going back in time and building out the Vespaquin Vileplume mirror matches or anything like that.
Yeah,
Vespaquin Vileplume versus Trevenant match, like
classic.
Well, I don't know. Any other decks to mention, Azul, before we wrap it up? Anything else we didn't talk about that you think is worthy of some input? Something like the Zoro box or anything like that?
No, I don't think the Zoro box still sucks. There's still too much Lost Box. And Lost Box will probably continue to rise in popularity, even if it only seems like a little bit each tournament. It feels like Lost Box is more popular, but just by like 1% or something. Like, I feel like it should be playing way more heavily, and we do see that in online tournaments. Lost Box is like 15-20%, but then come actual regionals, it doesn't quite hold the same weight. It feels like Lugia, that's when like we gotta make up the 30% for Lugia somewhere, so it's gotta come out of the Lost Box and out of everything else a little bit, I guess.
All right, well, I think that is going to do it for this week's episode. Thanks to everyone for listening. As always, if you did enjoy, we would really appreciate it if you would leave us a rating or review on your podcasting platform of choice, Spotify, Apple Podcasts, whatever it may be. And if you're watching on the YouTube channel, please be sure to subscribe, leave a like, all those good things. If you want to stay connected with us and the podcast, the best way to do that is over on Twitter. You can follow myself at Chip Ritchie, Azul at Azul_GG, and the podcast is at Uncommon_Energy.
Yeah, thanks for watching. Appreciate the support as always. We'll catch you next week. Peace.
See you.